So what I'm going to do is give you a brief overview, and then other presenters, we have 7 total talks in this session. They will cover different issues related to fair transport and toxicity of wastewater-borne contaminants. So I will briefly go over background, talk about fair transport and toxicity. So I think it's a good way to look at, when we talk about wastewater, it's good to look at that where the water is coming from that's making this wastewater. And this was a nice study done a couple years ago in about 1,200 homes in 14 U.S. cities. And they found that 66% of the homes in U.S. use anywhere from 40 to 80 gallons per capita per day. And the mean was 70 gallons. And if you look in the middle of the slide, a century ago, the folks were using only 10 gallons per capita per day. And then we can look at how this water is used inside the homes. For example, in about 27% of the water is used in flushing toilets, about 18% in showers and baths, 22% in washers and dryers, and another 16% in faucets. And this is kind of an interesting statistics, that the amount of money that we spend on wastewater and water per year is about $180 less than the money that we spend on soft drinks and beverages. So these different things going on in the home, that's what's going to result in different constituents in the final product, which will be wastewater. So when we talk about sources of contaminants in the natural water, the municipal water or groundwater, we have naturally occurring compounds, cations and anions, and we also have some organic materials. But when we, due to the use in the homes at different places, we add different things, nutrients, for example, pathogens which are not there to begin with. We also have other organics which were added during the chemical use inside the homes. So this is a nice table that shows the concentrations of different compounds in the untreated wastewater. And you can go down the list and look at the variability in case of salts to nutrients to milligrams per liter to trace organic compounds at very, very small concentration. So when we look for the sources of these compounds, you see a pattern here that feces, for example, or organics, they are the one that contribute most of these compounds. And some of the trace organic compounds results from pharmaceutical and other compounds that we use in the home for different purposes. So when we look how we manage wastewater in the world, there are 2 main ways, centralized and decentralized treatment. So in the case of centralized treatment, well, the wastewater is collected from a large population, a city or county, and then it's treated and discharged by the treatment plant back to surface water. Next community downstream picks up the water, they reuse it, then goes back again into the hydrological channel. So in the country, the treatment system that we use is pretty decent. It's secondary or higher level. We have about 22,000 wastewater treatment plants that serve more than 220 million people, and these generate more than 40 billion gallons of treated wastewater per day, and only a small proportion of that treated wastewater, less than 3%, is reused beneficially for irrigation purposes. Another product that comes out from treatment plants are biosolids or sludge, and about 8 million tons. 41% of this sludge is land applied. So there are also some concerns with different constituents that go with biosolids to the soil. So another way we treat wastewater, this is more in rural areas. We collect wastewater from individual house, and then a septic tank receives the water, and this is dispersed on site into a soil profile. About 25% of the people in the country use this system, and they discharge close to 800 billion gallons annually. Now, another system, not really a system, but about 1.8 billion people in low-income countries, they use what's called pit latrine, as you can see on the right side. You might have seen some of these in some of the national parks as well. And if you look at the population that use these systems, they are largely in Africa, parts of Asia, and South America. And look at the lower graph. These are the same people who also use groundwater for drinking. So there is a potential for contamination and concern. And if we look overall, we have 7 billion people. 6 billion people have mobile phones. And then 4.5 billion only have access to toilets. So 1.5 billion people, they don't have access to any of these facilities. And there's also concern that these folks defecate in open, that's where the food is grown. So food contamination, drinking water contamination is biggest concern in parts of Africa and Asia as well. So when we talk about how these wastewater-borne contaminants can affect water supplies, when we look into centralized systems, we are typically looking at surface water because that's where the wastewater is discharged. So we are looking at eutrophication, aquatic health, fish, birds with some of the trace organic compounds. In case of decentralized systems or pit latrines, we are looking at groundwater, concerns related to human health. And if you look on the right side, this is a graph from Tampa Bay watershed. About 4 million people live. What you see in the graph are the blue areas, that's where we have wastewater treatment plants. And the red areas are where we have decentralized systems. So the hydrology of this system is northeast, which is from this direction to Tampa Bay. So many of these septic systems that are outside, they can also be potential source of different contaminants that we see in surface water bodies. And something like this is very similar in other parts of the world. So when we are talking about fate of contaminants, we know this is a contaminant specific, whether it's a nutrient, trace organic, or a pathogen. So when we look into centralized systems, the fate of those compounds will largely depend on the treatment level. For example, this is a data for nitrogen and phosphorus species. On the left, you see untreated wastewater, and on the right, you see treated wastewater. So if the treatment plant has a really good treatment system, such as Advanced, that can really reduce concentrations of nitrogen and phosphorus. When we look at pathogens, they are very effectively treated and removed with chlorination and also with the UV. So we have a pretty much good handle in developed parts of the world on how to treat these. Then we have trace organic compounds, and we know some of these compounds, they're removed in the process. They go on the biosolids, and some other compounds, they're not. And even when we are able to remove part of these compounds, some of these compounds, they still exit in the effluent that goes back into the surface waters. In case of decentralized or septic systems, we are really depending on soil's ability to treat it, and also depth to groundwater is really important in terms of attenuating some of these compounds. So looking at the final destination of all the water, in this case, we are in a water cycle, hydrological cycle, is surface water and groundwater. So when the nitrogen starts its journey, whether from the wastewater treatment plants or central or decentralized facilities, other things can happen, denitrification, for example. In case of phosphorus, some of that could be dissolved. When we look into trace organics, a couple things can happen. They can volatilize, some compounds can sorb, they can also transform and biodegrade, and some of these could also be degraded with photolysis. So this is another example of some of these trace organic compounds and decentralized systems. Some of the data that we are collecting from Florida looking at different compounds, and we see that these compounds, they move even in the soil profile. And our soil is pretty sandy, and this data shows the three treatment systems that we are testing to see which compounds are where. And so some of the mechanisms that work in this case are biodegradation and sorption. We're looking more closely into this. Now, another way we use wastewater, about 3% of the total treated wastewater is used in irrigated systems. So there are also concerns with plant uptake of some of those compounds. And one of the speakers is going to talk about plant uptake component later in the session. So moving on to the transport, so we need to acknowledge that the wastewater is one of the sources, in addition to many other sources that exist in the environment. And the way these pollutants can get to water bodies would be surface transport and subsurface, as we discussed earlier. This is a slide from last year somewhere in Gulf of Mexico. So wherever these pollutants are, when they show up in water bodies, they are going to have some impact somewhere. Now, when we look at what can we do, what we need to do, So typically for transport, two things we can do. We can either monitor or we can also model. And if we look at the research, there are many studies that have detected these compounds, nutrient pathogens and other in surface water and groundwater. And in many of those watersheds where wastewater is a leading source, they have implicated wastewater as a source of these compounds. In the last 15 years, there has been quite a bit of research looking at trace organic compounds. So we know quite a bit that what's there, how much is there. On the other side, when we look at modeling, we have a fairly good handle on how to model nutrients, for example. So there is a less research effort on organics because they're new compounds. But we can certainly use the existing modeling approaches to understand these compounds better. So one of the questions that I've been asking, can we predict the fate and transport of these different contaminants? So when we talk about nutrients and pathogens, we can do with reasonable confidence what's going on. When we talk about trace organics, that's where it's a little difficult. They're complex compounds, they have many metabolites, very low concentrations, and those who analyze, I see Clinton back there, it can also be a nightmare to analyze these small concentrations. But it's possible we can learn from, these are similar compounds, organic compounds, we can learn from pesticides and priority pollutant. And some of the basic chemical principles, they should apply for these compounds, and such as we can use whether these compounds are more soluble or less soluble. Half-life can be another. We can see how long are they going to persist. We can also look, will they be degraded or volatilized? And in case of the plant uptake, we can look at the bioconcentration factors, if they can accumulate in the vegetation. And the compounds where those compounds that are detected at high concentration and high frequencies, that's where there is the biggest concern with the exposure. So moving on to the third or fourth part of toxicity, when we talk about impacts of these pollutants, we can pretty much group them into two categories, ecological and human health. In case of ecologically, we can look at nutrients, eutrophication, hypoxia, and toxins. And if you remember the last year's story in Toledo, Ohio, about toxins, trace organics, they can be toxic to aquatic and terrestrial organisms. And there are still human health concerns with nutrients, nitrate, for example, and pathogens, so on. So let's look at ecological impact. So we know that a large water bodies, rivers, streams, and lakes, and estuaries are impaired with the nutrients and other pollutants, and these are plant food, so they cause excessive plant growth wherever they are. With the pathogens, we also have recreational challenges in some of the beaches close to bigger cities. When we talk about trace organics, that's where we don't really know much yet. But these are compounds that can be toxic, that can potentially cause other impacts on aquatic life. So the examples of these pollution, they're widespread. Wherever you look, you see the algae in rivers and streams. So some of the problems that we see are similar because they are nutrients. When we look at trace organics and endocrine disruption, there's also concern with those compounds. And this is a cartoon from a PhD student. And in this case, we're looking at a wastewater-dominant stream where wastewater treatment plant is discharging water going into a stream. So in this case, in the stream you might have invertebrates that could be exposed to some of the trace organics, and some of the fish that's there could also be exposed. And if there are birds, this is, we're looking into a Payne's Prairie, a natural preserve. So in this case, you also can have concerns with the exposure to birds and the population that consume fish. There's also a risk, but these are things that we don't really know much about at this point. So when we look into human health, we know that the nitrate, for example, is toxic at higher concentrations, and EPA has a drinking water limit of 10 ppm. And in case of in developed countries, we do a fairly good job at removing nitrate. But in some other developing countries, nitrate is the biggest concern. And many times they don't even know that the water they are consuming has high concentration. This can also be a concern in developed countries. And if the people who are using septic systems, for example, they are far out in the cities, it's also very likely that they also have a groundwater well. So that water well could also be contaminated. When we talk about pathogens, when it rains a lot, in other words, when we have a hydraulic failure, pit lat rains and other issues, they can also cause many of these problems. And when we know poor sanitation is one of the main reasons in developing countries that kills more than 2,000 people. In case of trace organic chemicals, these are still new compounds. We are still learning what it means when we see those small concentrations in drinking water. And if you remember a couple of years ago, there were a series of stories in Associated Press talking about how these compounds are present in the drinking water. But that's something we need to look more closely. What impact those small concentrations can have in the long run. So this is my summary slide. So when we talk about how do we manage wastewater, in case of nutrients, we do a fairly good job, but these are still our main pollutants. So they're going to continue to be a challenge, and so we need to know better. We need to learn better how to manage it. In case of pathogens, they don't occur regularly, so they are largely managed in developed parts of the world. They are main pollutants in developing world. When we talk about trace organics, our knowledge has increased tremendously over the last 15 plus years, and the human health connection risk is not known, and that's something we need to look closely. So when we are talking about how do we manage risk, one of our best bet is if we can improve treatment at source. So if we can remove them where they begin, that's our best. That's the best strategy. And related to that, we can also identify the thresholds, at what concentrations these won't cause other problems. And then we can also look at the assimilative capacity of a system before they can become toxic. And that's one way we can manage risk. Okay, I guess I have 2 minutes, but we have 6 more talks that are going to address different issues. If there are any questions, we have 2 minutes.